We're going to switch gears, and we have the deputy governor of the state of Illinois, Dan Hynes, former state comptroller.
Great to be with you.
Good to be with you. So do I call you governor?
No, please. No, no, no. We have one
governor. I mean, you tried that once.
Yeah, that's
you know.
Right. That's right. We have one governor.
All right.
J.B. Pritzker.
Well, I don't want to call you deputy. Then it sounds like I'm talking to Barney Fife.
Dan is good.
All right, Dan. Fair enough. Fair enough. So, you know, obviously this issue of the graduated rate income tax, I'll let you use the euphemisms, as I call it, graduated rate income tax. Well, now we're finally seeing some more substantive effects of it as far as what it could do with a rate structure. And I think a lot of legislators were surprised that that rate structure came out as quick as it did. And but again, is this the governor's like offering salvo here for negotiating an ultimate rate structure?
It is, yes. The governor has said from the beginning that this would be a discussion and negotiation with the General Assembly, and this was our proposal. We worked very hard at it, and we think we've come to a pretty good balance of raising revenues that are badly needed, but not hurting taxpayers who can ill afford it. And so what we've come up with is that under this plan, 97% of taxpayers would see a reduction or stay the same in their tax burden, and 3% would see an increase. And this is a way to solve a budget crisis. That's what we have to remember. We're not, you know, we're trying to accomplish two things, make the tax system fair and also solve a massive budget deficit.
So we're looking at a budget hole of like $3.2 billion for this next budget year. Not that we would have this graduated rate tax in effect then until 2020, ostensibly. But one of the questions I had is, and you know this from politics too, not that I'm any great advocate of tax increases, but there are so very rare times in a political process that you can go for that bite of the apple. Is this a big enough bite of the apple as far as the revenue that it produces?
It is. I mean, again, we were very careful and deliberative in our process to raise enough money to solve the budget deficit and our structural budget problem, but not asking taxpayers for more than needed. And to your point, I think that the impasse of the last few years and just the, you know, the damage caused by you know, either political turmoil or bad budget management, I think people are aware that there's a problem, and hopefully they realize that there's only a few options. We can cut 15% from our discretionary spending, which would be very, very harmful to people who really need government and those who care about higher education and K-12, or we can raise taxes on everybody, which we don't want to do, or this third plan, which is a fair tax where 3% of taxpayers pay more and 97% pay the same or less.
I was curious about, and let's, I don't want to necessarily go too deep here into the individual rate structure here, but it's, you know, people look at a number and then they look at a rate, and it's like, no, this is, you pay X on the first 10,000, you pay X on the next, and X and X and X up. So it's not, everything is not taxed at that one rate, except for millionaires. And I was kind of curious about how that part figured into the calculation.
Well, I mean, it was just, I mean, simply we looked at the rates to find out what would be fair and what would solve the problem.
A sweet spot. You look for a sweet spot.
We look for a sweet spot. And, you know, the rate structure we've put forward with the highest rate of 7.95% keeps us competitive with our neighboring states, keeps us far below New York, California, and other major states with major metropolitan areas. And that's what we were trying to accomplish. And then within that framework, where can you establish those middle rates where, you know, those under $250,000 would pay less or the same? And between, you know, over $250,000 would see a gradual increase. And so, you know, if you're making $280,000, you're not going to see a huge increase. Going up to $1 million, yes. If you're making $1 million or more, you're going to see a 7.95% effective rate, basically a flat rate. And that rate is, you know, I think a reasonable number for those making over $1 million.
I thought it was interesting the other day where the state Republican Party chairman put out a press release about if a governor wants to pay a fair tax, it ought to start with him, about money offshored, which I thought that was kind of interesting that Tim Snyder would say this, given that Bruce Rauner was the governor who picked him to be chairman, and I don't remember him talking about anything about any kind of fair taxation rate at that point when Bruce Rauner was in charge.
Right. And, you know, the governor has been very clear that, you know, he thinks our current system is unfair because he's paying the same rate as somebody making minimum wage, somebody making $50,000 a year, a family of four, and that's not right. So the highest rate will go up and he will be paying more. And that's fair and right.
What about as far as the business end of things? And one of the things, I had Greg Bays on, the former head of the Manufacturers Association. He's leading one of the dark money groups. There's pro and con. He's leading the one, Ideas Illinois, that is against it. He, as you call it a fair tax, he calls it a jobs tax, and says that the taxation rate for corporations is going to be significant, as well as the fact of how proprietors that pay their business taxes through the Illinois individual income tax, LLCs, those kinds of things, that they're going to get significantly hit as well.
Well, when you talk about our business climate, I mean, I think you need to step back and look at the big picture, which is that business leaders that I talk to will say that it's a variety of factors that matter to them. They want a strong economic base where they're going to locate. They want stability in their government and predictability, and that has been lacking for 4 years with the dysfunction in Springfield and the never-ending bickering and battles going on. We've put an end to that, and they want something, a government that could pay its bills. I think those are important, but to the tax rate, you know, if you look at LLCs, I mean, these statistics include business owners who file with LLCs, and still the facts remain that less than 3% of taxpayers, including those who are receiving income from their businesses, LLCs, are going to be seeing an increase, and 97% will be seeing less. So, you know, many businesses have a flow-through model, the LLC, and so we're really talking about the same model. And in terms of the corporate rate, again, I think the rate right now we're proposing is to tie the corporate rate to the highest personal income, which makes sense because of that whole the reality of the LLC. And I think our corporate rate is competitive, especially when you couple it with those other factors that I mentioned, having a functioning government, having a government that could pay its bills and provide that stability and predictability that they're looking for.
But what about personal property replacement tax, which basically raises that effective business tax rate?
Right. Even when you include that and you take the corporate rate plus the personal property replacement tax, you still are talking about a rate that is competitive with our neighboring states. Because the corporate rate, it has a variety of factors. If you're located in Illinois, you're going to get certain benefits. If you're located outside of Illinois, you lose those benefits of factoring in headcount and assets owned here in the state. So I think when you bring all this together and you really zero in on corporations and businesses that are located here, we're creating, I think, a competitive environment.
We're speaking to Dan Hines, former state comptroller and deputy governor for the state of Illinois, about Governor Pritzker's proposed graduated rate income tax, proposed constitutional amendment. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. Here in the Allstate Skyline studio, speaking with Deputy Governor and former State Comptroller Dan Hines, we talk about Governor J.B. Pritzker's proposal for a graduated rate income tax. A couple of text questions have come in. One is there some kind of a marriage penalty that exists with this?
No, we tried to keep this as simple as possible. And so our model just basically assumes the same rates for individual filers and married filers. And so, you know, the question is, well, okay, so are people going to try to do the calculation of whether they're better off filing individually or as couples? You know, the studies have shown that at the state level, you're not going to see a lot of changed behavior, especially since the federal policies and federal tax rates and the benefits of filing jointly far outweigh anything that could happen at the state level. So we don't see that as being an issue. And again, the point we were trying to make and what we were trying to accomplish is to keep it very simple. And so having the one rate and the one structure for both individual and joint filers, we think is simpler, easier, and fair.
Another question, and one that comes up a lot, is where are the budget cuts? And to me, I would think, you know, certainly that's something that Republicans are looking for as they decide whether they want to embark in joining in this discussion on a graduated rate tax. Already we've seen the House Republicans pretty much say no way. Senate Republicans maybe a little leeway there when they talk about protections for the middle class.
Right. Well, when you talk about cuts, I mean, people need to be specific about where they want to cut, because the budget that the governor presented, I would describe as both austere as well as very targeted to spending where it matters. The increases are in education, human services, public safety. The rest of the budget has been held flat or has had just growth based on inflation. And so it's very difficult to find cuts that aren't going to be very, very harmful to people across the state. And that's really the way we've tried to frame this whole debate, is if you don't like a fair tax, if you believe that a fair tax is not the right solution, then there's only two other options: cutting 15% of discretionary spending, including education, or raising taxes on everybody. And that's where I think we really need to focus this whole debate is, you know, I think people know we have a $3+ billion deficit that can only be solved a few different ways. And if you want to cut, you got to be specific about where you're going to cut 15% of discretionary spending. That's not the option we're looking at.
Well, and I'm not saying you have to cut necessarily all 15%. I think there's a certain kind of buy-in of goodwill that would exist if there was some kind of effort to say, you know, look, we're cutting this. I mean, I'm not talking about the automatic push button that says waste, fraud, and abuse, but certainly we've been around government to know that some things work and some things don't work, and just that, for that accountability factor is what I'm talking about.
Right. I mean, there were cuts contained in the budget. For example, the scholarship program, the private school scholarship program, we curtailed and cut back, and that's something that is you know, controversial. I mean, there's people, right, who really want that program, and as this process goes on, we can identify others. You have to keep in mind that we had about 6 weeks to put the budget together when we came into office. We went through a very arduous process of working with the agencies. And I would describe the process of putting that budget together as one of saying no to, you know, 90% of spending
proposals. Well, especially coming off of almost 4 years of starvation.
Yeah, and you know, that's what we heard over and over, is that the agencies had been hollowed out. There's, you know, just severe reductions and kind of freeze of critical human service programs, and that's why we focused our spending increases on education, human services, and public safety while holding line everywhere else.
So that's, we've got this whole issue of the graduated rate kind of hanging over us for the next 2 years. And obviously the legislature will have to decide whether to put it on the ballot. That's something you want that vote. The administration wants that vote this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes, soon.
I think it's probably fair to say that a rate structure also needs to be adopted pending a constitutional amendment just to try to fill the vacuum that opponents would say, you know, well, it's not going to stop there. It's going to end there. At least it gives a projection out there for people to look at. What about a capital bill? What about infrastructure? Where are we on that?
Yeah, there, you know, we strongly believe there needs to be a capital bill, and we're working hard with the legislature on putting that plan together. It's going to consist of, you know, doing an inventory and calculation of our deferred maintenance needs. There's, you know, it's been nearly 10 years or more since we've had any kind of major capital bill. So our infrastructure is in dire need of investment. So looking at deferred maintenance, looking at our roads, bridges, and infrastructure for our transportation, higher education and K through 12, other ideas that the General Assembly comes up with, we welcome. So that's going to be an independent process to the operating budget that we've already proposed, and the fair tax plan that we've proposed is a capital bill, and we think it's very much needed, and we'll be working to get that done.
But then there's always the revenue to pay for it, which that's always the stickler.
Right.
Everybody likes to vote for projects. They don't necessarily want to pay for them.
No, that's right. There needs to be revenue identified to support the bonds that will, as well as any kind of pay-as-you-go portion of the capital bill. And we're starting to work with the legislature on some revenue ideas there.
I mean, it's my view that that's something that probably doesn't come together till the scheduled end of the session, and that it's also always good to use for leverage for other things that the administration might want some votes for.
Well, I do think...
Is that too cynical?
Well, I mean, it all of this needs to be taken into consideration together, yeah, because you don't want to do things in isolation, and part of solving our budget crisis is to get our economy growing again, and that includes a capital bill that will put people back to work, that will make our will strengthen our infrastructure, both our roads and bridges, as well as just our economic infrastructure. So yeah, we do think it should all be taken together, including the fair tax, which, as you said, we want that voted on this session, and we want a constitutional amendment to be, also include very, very transparent rate structure so people know what they're voting for.
That's Illinois Deputy Governor Dan Hines, former state comptroller for the state of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.